In the course of our work there, well, I won't tell you all the research, one of the studies was called the Good Friday Study, which is an interesting study. It concerns the sacramental use of the chemicals. That on Good Friday, 20 theological students from a seminary, a nearby seminary, were divided into two groups. I mean, as a research thing, they didn't know which groups they were in. Half of them were given this chemical, this mushroom, in a pill form, psilocybin, and half of them were given a placebo, that is something that made their skin feel funny but didn't affect their consciousness. And then they all were placed in the basement room of the Boston University Chapel, where these Friday services were being beamed in through speakers. So these are seminary students who are hearing the Good Friday service, some of whom are on psilocybin and some of whom aren't. It's called a double-blind placebo study. And it was being done by an MD who was taking his PhD at the Harvard School of Divinity. Right? In other words, it was quite an impressive game. It involved three universities. After the experience, all of the seminarians tape recorded what happened to them during that period. Those tapes were then typed. All references to chemicals were taken out. And then the protocols were given to leading theologians around the United States. And they were given a checklist of 9 criteria that the Bible puts forth of a religious revelatory experience. Okay? And they were to check whether these protocols reflected any of these 9 criteria. Is it clear what I'm telling you, the story? Of the people who had the placebo, 1 of the 10 people had 1 of the 9 experiences. Of the people that had the psilocybin, 9 of them had 4 or more of the 9 criteria of a genuine religious revelatory experience. And the theologians concluded that these 9 people, in their estimation, they didn't know it had anything to do with drugs, these 9 people had had a genuine, in the biblical sense, a genuine religious revelatory experience. They didn't know whether this was a story from Ezekiel or where it was from. They just knew it was a protocol. Now, society had a difficult time dealing with this. In Time magazine, it was called instant mysticism, and it was presented as in a facetious, snide way, because for the religious institutions to accept the fact that somebody could have a genuine religious revelatory experience, I mean, what most of the religions are based upon is somebody historically having that, but nobody has them now. And the priests don't have them, and the priest class is merely helping the parishioner keep as a good person because the mystical part of the direct mystical experience has been lost in the exoteric religious traditions. So this was quite a threat to the religious establishment. And you can imagine why, because there's a lot of power in the game, and when you shake up social power. So here was one example where the social power led people to have to interpret these experiences as dangerous to the society. And it was generally seen that these phenomena were dangerous to the social structures of the society. And society had to mobilize to stop it. And so what happened was that almost all of these chemicals were outlawed as fast as they appeared. And there were very creative people finding new things, and there was a complete, continuous dance of outlaw and new thing and outlaw and new thing, and it went on for still till now. And at the height of it, there were tens of thousands of young people who were turning on, and as Tim Leary used to say, you turn on, you tune in, and then you drop out. You turn on, you tune in to how reality is, and then you decide you don't necessarily want to play the game of the society anymore, and then you figure out how to play in a different way. So out of that came new kinds of social structures, communes, bartering systems, whole different social structures were starting to emerge in the 60s. Now, the result of making them illegal were two interesting phenomena. First of all, in the 60s, these chemicals were passed from hand to hand, and they were passed along with a great deal of love. And people manufactured them and then sold them at cost and passed them on, feeling great joy that they were opening people to these experiences. As the illegality started to creep in, then a new group came into the market to manufacture, which was really organized crime, in effect. And it started, as it became anything in a society, when it becomes powerful, it attracts power players, who themselves don't want to alter their consciousness. They just want to use this as a way of gaining more power within the social structure. And so it started to change. And the chemicals started to be sold at higher and higher prices, which meant that when you got a chemical, you paid too much for it, which made you paranoid as you got it. And that paranoia started to affect the nature of your experience. Because what we found out was that what happens when you take the chemical is a function of the set and the setting. It's a function of the set of your mind. And that's why in the religious rituals, you were prepared so carefully with fasting, with ritual preparation before you had the experience. To just be out at a party and somebody says, here, drink this, that's hardly a ritual preparation. I mean, it is a ritual, but it's not one that assures that you're going to have a profound and beautiful experience, or a religious or mystical experience. And what happened was, more and more young people started to use these chemicals not to have a religious revelatory experience. They started to use them to enhance their sensory pleasure. Started to try to use these drugs, except they were too powerful for that. And so some of them started to have bad trips. What a bad trip was when you took something that you thought was going to make the music great, and suddenly the universe opened up and you were at the edge of the void. You hadn't planned for that. And you got completely disoriented from that, and you started to get frightened and push away, and you had nobody to guide you and no preparation to understand what was happening to you. And you got frightened, and out of that fear came resistance, and out of resistance came closing down, and then panic, and then you were ended up often in a hospital having to be tranquilized. And then coming away saying, that's a ghastly thing, and everybody saying, that's terrible. And the people that tranquilized you were people that never had that chemical. So now the question is, your question is, under what conditions would you take it, and what would be its merit? And I guess I would say that when you're taking a chemical in a society that is made it illegal, first of all, you have to realize that there is an attendant paranoia to the whole phenomenon because of the social structures. Because, as I said, it's set and setting. It's where your mind is at, and it's also the environmental conditions in which you take it. If you can override that, that is, you can create a system out in nature or out in a private space where you can be a setting, meaning surrounded by people who have had good experiences and who are guides or who are well understanding in this, or you yourself are well understanding, then it is possible to use these to benefit. Then the question is, what is it you want from them? That's the set. And if the set is to enhance pleasure, that's what it will do. And then low dosages are fine because they'll allow you to go into the astral planes. If you're going to use these chemicals for profound spiritual transformation, then you're going to use higher dosages. You're going to prepare your body with fasting and with study. And then you're going to do it in the presence of a guide. and you're going to be ready to keep surrendering. What it is really is psychological death. It really has the aspect of lest ye die, ye cannot be born again. It is an experience that is very parallel to psychological death.